Evening, friends. My name is Al. I'm an alcoholic. And as was read, I suffer from an illness. And, you know, it doesn't matter how long I'm sober. You know, I've been coming to AA for 15 years now. I've been sober for 15 years. And I guess that illness is going to stay with me for the rest of my life, you know. Because it tells us this disease is centered in my mind, you know. And, you know, letting go sometimes is easier said than done, you know. And so, you know, that's life, eh? We have some tools here. They tell, you know, we have steps. They have a step meeting here. It's good to see that people, you know, try to learn how to change their lives, you know. We have those 12 steps. And my disease, I guess, you know, I was born with this disease. I come from a home of alcoholics. My dad drank. My grandparents drank. Everybody drank in my home. It was a way of life. It was like birthday parties, Christmases, New Year's. You didn't need an excuse to drink around my place, you know. The uncle down the street made his moonshine, sold it under the table. He made a living out of that, you know. And kids were introduced to alcohol when they were young, you know. It was just normal. If you can crawl up to the table and grab the beer off the table and drink it, good for you, you know. That's the way it was. And nobody really cared. And they thought it was funny to see the kids when they wobbled around and they fell down and, you know, and they were drunk and you put them to bed and they just passed out. And that was what I grew up in, you know. So coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, when they said, "You think you have a problem with alcohol?" Me, I never had a problem with alcohol, you know. Alcohol was the way of life, you know. And maybe some other people, they might have a problem with alcohol, but not me, you know. My problem was living. And I, like I said, that problem, that's something that I have to be, you know, to work on for the rest of my life, the problem of living, you know. Because the skills never came. Coming from my family, it was my old man was a very prideful, egotistic guy. He ran on ego and on pride, you know. He never apologized for anything, and he was driven like that, you know. And that's what he instilled into the kids, you know. And fear was always fear. You never knew when he came home, you know, if he was going to be in a good mood or if he was going to beat the crap out of everybody, you know. Because he'd work hard, and when he'd finish working, he'd go out drinking, and you never knew what to expect. So as a kid growing up, it was always fear. You never knew what to expect, you know. And sometimes it was good, and sometimes it wasn't so good. And, you know, so that being able to express your feelings is no such thing, you know. I never knew that, you know. It was a lot of, today, nowadays, you know, kids grow up, they got, like, support groups for this, they got, you know, at school, with us, whatever happened, you shut your mouth and you didn't talk about it, you know. So you stuff things inside all your life, you know. And up until I came into AA, I had like so many thousands of things that I had stuffed down that I thought I was different from everybody because, you know, you never shared your feelings. And, you know, and something was really wrong with me. I wasn't an alcoholic, I was probably crazy or, you know. But, you know, and that was the beginning of it, you see. And I hadn't really got into the serious drinking at that time, and I was already feeling different from other people. You know, I didn't fit in. And like I said, the drinking occasions came along probably many times that I don't even remember that I had drank and maybe got a little bit buzzed when I was a kid. You know, and didn't really matter, but I remember my first drunk. You know, when I was 13 years old, and I was at a wedding reception, and I was an usher at my cousin's wedding, and I came in after the service and that, walked into this room, and it was an open bar, and it was hot, and I was thirsty, and usually I would have picked up a Coke or something, you know, or Pepsi or whatever, soft drink, you know. And for some reason, there was these two guys standing at the bar, and the one guy said, "Well, I'll have a screwdriver." And the curiosity, you know, like I like to try anything, you know. You dare me, I do it, you know. And the curiosity, I had to taste, see what it tasted like, you know. And I ordered that screwdriver, and a couple of screwdrivers later, the chair fell over, you know. Everybody's eating dinner. The chair happened to fall over, and I ended up under the table. And the old aunt was really, really upset with me, and she started to shake me and say, "Listen, go to the washroom and put some water on your face." And dragged myself up off the floor, and the room started to spin, you know. And that was the first time experience for me, room spinnings, you know. And bouncing into the washroom, got there just in time to throw up on the floor, you know. And I sat on the toilet seat, you know, and I must have passed out for a couple hours, and, you know, by the time I got out there, lunch was finished, and dinner had been finished, and things were happening, and I dragged my ass in there, you know, and dry, you know, you gotta drink something, because your mouth is all dry, you know. And I walked by the bar again, and I said, "No more screwdrivers, you know. I don't like the way they make me feel, they make me throw up, and all that." And the guy's there, and he said, "Give me a rye and ginger ale." And I said, "Oh, I'll have one of those." And I woke up the next night, you know. So I missed that whole, from Saturday probably noon till Sunday night. I don't know what happened. You know, I have little vague glimpses, and I got a lot of people who told me the story, you know. And that's, you know, that was the first time I really got drunk. And I used to go to church, you know. It tells us here when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, you have to be able to identify, and you have to try to find yourself a higher power, you know, power greater than yourself. And around that time, when I was like 13, you know, I remember I used to go to church. My mother, she used to make me go to church. You know, like a Catholic and that, but I never really believed because I doubted everything, you know, because you tell me you got to have faith and you got to show me. You know, I'm the type of person you got to show, you know. And so one day, down the street was a pool hall, and I used to go to the church, and the old man gave me a quarter to throw in a collection, and I just happened to walk by there that Sunday, and there was a bunch of guys outside, and he said, "Why are you bother going to church? Why don't you come in here, shoot an hour pool, and then you go home after, you know." And that's what I did. And that was the end of my religious experience. You know? That was the end of God. You know? And that's what I did. And eventually, you know, you get to know the people who hang around there, and it's all like selling drugs and fencing hot stuff and, you know, and all the other shit that goes with it, you know. And you get to meet all the local criminals around town, and, you know, and before you know it, you know, you're just a part of the whole scene, you know, it becomes a way of life. And they invite you to the tavern, and one day they said, "Al, why don't you come to the tavern?" You know, and I was way underage, you know, and I thought, if I go to the tavern, maybe the old man's going to be there, and family's going to be there, and all these people, you know, and they're not going to be cool, you know. They're just going to boot me out, and they're going to embarrass me, you know, in front of all my new friends here, you know. And But I went, you know, I got the courage to go. And I walked in and I looked around, and you know, some of the old neighbors, they were laughing. They said, "Look, the kid's over here," you know. And I sat down, the waiter sat us by the door in case the cops came, and he asked me what I wanted to drink. And I looked around, and everybody was drinking quarts, so I ordered a quart and sat down, and I drank that quart, and I ordered another quart, and something changed, you know. I felt like, you know, I had arrived, like Bill said. I had arrived too, you know. I got really a good buzz off of it. I got a good feeling, you know. I got drunk like on two quarts. And I looked to recapture that feeling for the rest of my drinking, you know, from that age right on. Because something happened that changed. The obsession started right there, you see. Because all I could think about was the next Thursday night, when I could go back there and sit down and have a couple of quarts and relax, you know? And I tried to recapture that, and I could never get that feeling back again. You know? But you know, I took a part-time job because back then I could only drink two quarts because I had only $2 to spend a week. You know, it was enough for two quarts and a pack of cigarettes. You know, but I started delivering groceries on the side, you know, and I'd make an extra $10. You know. And now I could drink Thursday, and I could drink Friday and Saturday. And I can go to the after-hour bars, you know, after the tavern closed. And life was pretty good. I was on my way, you know. And where? I don't know where. You know, I was on my way to, but it didn't really matter. Because, you know, that's the way I live my life. Sometimes I still do that, you know. I still don't know where I'm going, you know. But it's okay, you know. It's the journey, you know. It's not getting to somewhere. That's what it's all about. You know? And, you know, and like the obsession had started. And relationships, you know. I used to meet a lot of nice women, you know. I don't know. I was always lucky. I always, you know, met the best women. I don't know, maybe they tried to help me or whatever, you know, they thought maybe they could do something with me and turn me around, but wasn't much hope, you know, because for me, the alcohol, the drinking was, played the big part in my life, you know. Relationships, love was like, for me, like, was going, this is what I learned, okay, I learned this on the bars, you know, was like, you go to the motel, and you do your thing, and then you come back to the bar and you do some more drinking. So if I look back at my life, selfish, self-centered, right from the start, you know, and that's the whole disease here. It's about me, you know, everything is about me. It revolves about me. It's not about God. The whole world centers around me. And, you know, and so I could never really make anything work. My problem was, like, was how to get into this relationship and how to get out of this other relationship, you see? You know, always, always problems like that, you know. Always confusing things. How do you tell, you know, missing school, you know. Always in trouble at school, always in trouble. The intercom, I got to go to the principal's office. You know? Always trying to find excuses how to get out of this one, you know. And, you know, my life was, right from the beginning, was always, you know, upside down, you know. Always trying to find how to lie your way out of this one again, you know. And how to lie yourself out in the next lie, and this and that, and it's just so confusing everything, you know. And, you know. So, eventually what happened is, I met this lady and, we settled, you know, she wanted to get married. And I figured I needed a change, you know, the life, you know, on the streets was a little bit wild already, you know. Was, when you're young it's okay, but when you get older, you know, the crime gets a little bit worse, you know, and it gets really crazy, you know. Violence got bad and, you know, and you never knew if you were gonna, you know, make it through the night sometimes, you know. And so I figured I needed a change. That was my problem. You see, I had all these problems in life, but if I only settled down, you know, and I would become maybe, you know, I'd become more responsible, you know. So, you know, I got married and, you know, it was good for a couple of months. But if you don't grow, you know, you don't communicate and you don't have, you don't share feelings together and, you know, you're doomed from the start, you know, and that's what it was all about. It was a physical attraction and that lasted for a little while and, you know, and it doesn't, you know, just wasn't enough, you know. I'll tell you, I worked, I got a job working for my uncle. He had a big business. He was very successful and he hired a lot of people and, you know, and he always tried to help me. He tried to send me to school, you know, and I'd drop courses and I'd finish some and then I'd take some another time, and you know. Because I was never really into anything. Like, and he tried to help me and I'd show up sometimes. Sometimes, I'll tell you a story about my drinking, okay? I went to a bar one night. I got paid on a Thursday night and I had like money in my pocket. So I figured, I'll stop at the bar and I'll just have a couple of drinks before I go home, okay? So I went and had a couple of drinks. Next thing, I wake up on the other side of Parc Buron-Drin in Val-d'Or with these two women, two French women. I can hardly speak any French. I don't know who they are. I've never seen them before in my life. I'm going to a wedding for 2 weeks, okay, in Malartic, you know. And I'm supposed to be at work in the morning, you know. And this is what happened when I picked up a drink. I never knew what was going to happen or where I was going to end up. And that's why they say it's the first drink. You know? And I couldn't believe that ever. I always used to say the sixth, the seventh, the tenth, whatever. Not the first one, you know. But it's really that first one, you know, that gets me every time. You know. And you know, my, like I said, the marriage, there was always conflict. I'm going to tell you how I met my wife. Okay, how I met her family. It was on Christmas Eve. I got invited over for Christmas dinner, okay? And so she wanted me to meet her father and her brothers and all this. And so I go, I get dressed nice, and I go to her drive up there, and I ring the doorbell, And this old guy opens up the door. He shakes my hand, and with the other hand, he gives me a beer. And I looked at the guy, and I thought to myself, I said, boy, oh boy, what a nice way to be welcomed, eh? With a beer, right when you walk in the door. And I thought, what a nice family, you know? And the mother-in-law, she made dinner, and the uncle drove down from Queens, New York with his family. And probably 10:30 at night, the brothers were trying to kill each other and the old man. The cops were outside. It was like all cop cars up and down the street with sirens flashing and, you know, lights flashing. The uncle took his family, drove all the way back to New York in the middle of the night. You know? And I thought, what a nice family. I fit in. You know, the excitement, you know, and that. You know, this isn't going to be dull here at all, you know. And I fit in right with these people, you know. And it was insanity. You know? That was insanity. That part of my life, too. And, you know, so it was always drinking. And always my life centered around drinking. You know, from a kid, right, till the day I walked in AA. And I worked for, you know, this company, and like I screwed up all the time. So I get paid, and I was one of these guys that you pay me on Thursday, and you can be sure you won't see me again till Monday, you know. And I have to come back Monday because I have to work again, you see, because I'm broke. I go into the bar, and this is what I do. I don't trust my wife, you know, with money in the bank. So I like to, you know, I like to carry my money around with me. Eh? So I get my paycheck, I go to the tavern, I cash my check, I have a quart, okay? Just gonna have one quart, you know, because you can't just cash your check and walk away, eh? You gotta drink something. So I have that one quart, and before I know it, like, it's last call and like after hours bar, 4 o'clock in the morning, and shit, I'm supposed to be at home, you know? I feel the guilt, the remorse, you know? By Monday morning, I'm broke, I got no more money. I'm back on the arm, running tabs at all these bars around town. And by the time I get paid, I got to pay off all these tabs again, you see? So this is an endless cycle. I can't get out of this, you know? And I always say to myself, next week it's going to be different. But the only problem is I go and I pick up that first drink and I forget all about what I was going to do, you know? All the good intentions I have when I start drinking, you can forget about them. The whole picture changes, you know? And that was how the drinking went, you know? And I don't know, like I said, I thought, you know, things were not right, you know, in my head. You know, a lot of times I'd sit down and I'd have to drink just to try to figure things out, you know, under a lot of pressure, you know, the total insanity. When I drank, there was this guy, I was supposed to be promoted, you know, I had this big promotion to in the business, and the old guy was supposed to retire, and he was supposed to retire like when he was 65, eh? But like, he never did nothing all day long because I looked after the business for him, so he kept postponing his retirement, 66, 67, 70. So man, I had a lot of resentments with this old guy, you know. All he does is he sits there and drinks coffee all day long, you know. I got bust my ass all day, you know. And eventually he retired. So my cousin was the general manager, so we went and he asked me, he said, Al, he said, for the old guy we're going to have a retirement party. He said, you want to help me with it? I said, sure, no problem. So we went to Petty Cash. We took 12 grand out of the petty cash, okay? We rented Mannions, okay? We had a dinner for all management and their families and all these people. We bought them like a gold watch and we bought them all this other stuff, you know? And so we put on this party and the vice president gave me a lift because I had problems with my car. And me, you know, after a couple of drinks in me, like me, I get a lot of power in, you know? And I grab them on the side and I tell them, listen, you walk around with your hands in your pocket playing with your balls all day. You do sweet F-ball all day, you know. And I said, you better clear up your act because I'm going to go upstairs to my uncle. I'm going to tell him about you. Your ass is out the door, man. Boy, oh boy, the guy looked at me and he said, you thought you were going to get a lift home with me, eh? He said, you get home anyway, but you're not getting in my car again. And so at the end of the night, you know, us drunks, eh? We have like $1,800 left after this whole big deal, eh? And normal people go and they bring it back to the petty cash the next day. Well, us, the three of us, we went to the strip bar. We had like 10 strippers dancing for us the whole night till we blew every cent of it, okay? And that's how we are, you know? When it comes to drinking, we don't give a shit, you know, what it's going to cost or where we're going to get the money, but we'll do it somehow, you know? And that was my whole thing. Selfish, self-centered, you know? It was all about me my whole life. kids came along, you know, my first son. I'd come home on a Sunday morning, 4:30, pissed drunk, you know, driving, you know, like this. So, and he has a hockey practice at 5 o'clock in the morning, imagine, you know. And I got to dress this kid up, you know, and drive him drunk to the arena. And I sit up in the stands. I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to see anybody. I just want to pass out, you know. And I didn't want to be there, you know, all about me. You know, that's my disease. And, you know, it went on and on. And the wife got fed up already, and she left. She tried to teach me lessons many times, you know. She took the kids, and she moved to her mom's, you know, but she didn't really want to live with three kids at her mom's place, so she'd always come back, you know. So after about 3-4 times of doing that, one night I came home, you know, after my night out, and I come home, and my keys don't fit in the lock anymore, right? So what do? You close the door in, right? That's the normal way you get in, right? Nobody answers the door. Only problem is, the cops were standing right on the corner of the street waiting for me, you know? So I knew after they changed the locks, they went and they called the cops because they knew I was going to... So that's the way they got rid of me this time, you know? And, you know... So here I am, I'm sleeping in my car. I got no money, I'm broke, you know? I'm broke, I got... no place to go. My family don't want me. Nobody wants me. I just have my job left, you know. And I, after a couple of days in jail, I get to, I go to work, you know. I come in there and like a mouse, you know, humble, you know, ready for the shit and everything. And nobody says anything to me. And in my mind, it's going on like, what's going on? This isn't normal, you know. Usually, I get called up to the in the intercom on the intercom, you know, and. Here I am in trouble again, and they just ignored me, you know. And so I had to find out what's going on here. How come I'm ignored, you know? And I walked in and I said, you don't believe what happened to me the last couple of days. And they said, we know all about it. And we're going to have this fellow come in and you're going to speak to him, you know. And I thought, who the hell am I going to speak to? And about 3 o'clock this guy comes in, and he's like a counselor or some guy, you know, from a treatment center. And he starts to talk to me. He says, you want a coffee? I said, no, I want no coffee. I got a paycheck and check in my pocket. I'm thirsty, eh? You know, I gotta go to the bar and cash that thing fast because if I get there late, he's got no more money. And he asked me, you think you have a problem with alcohol? And I looked at him and I said, no. Me? I said, I don't have a problem with alcohol. I said, I have a problem with my wife. I have a problem with my job, I have a problem with you, but alcohol, it's not a problem, you know. And he starts to tell me about this guy Bernie I work with, and he goes to Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, Bernie 3 weeks ago came to me in my office, and he walked in and he said, he showed me a gold medallion that he got, okay, from you people. I said, how much is that worth? I told him. He said, not money. I said, what's that for? He said, they gave it to me at Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, Alcoholics Anonymous is very generous people. He says, it's not solid gold. He says, it's just plated. I said, what's that, that's that worth? He said, I didn't drink for 10 years. I said, big shit. So what? You know, what's the big deal? I didn't drink for 10 years, you know. And the bridge, Native schools, the bridge in 1990, you know. He lived on the South Shore, and he used to have to take the Champlain Bridge, and he'd sit in traffic till 8:30 at night all the time, you know. And he'd come to work the next day, and he'd complain, you know. Here I am, I sit in traffic. I told him, what's wrong with you? You come to the tavern, you have a couple of quarts. When the traffic's gone, you go home, you know. Makes sense to me, you know. That's logical alcoholic thinking, you know. And one day in comes Bernie, and I ordered him a quart. And he fidgeted, and he played, he peeled the label, and he, after half an hour, he drank it. 10 quarts later, he was out on the floor, you know, and we left him. You know? And he was a big guy, he was a big guy. And so when he said to me, Bernie goes to AA, I laughed. I said, yeah, he needs AA. I said, him, he drinks, he passes out on the floor. I said, us, we drink, we go to the bars after, we go all over town, you know. I'm not like him, you know? So I couldn't identify. You know? I compared myself to how other people drank. And so I went to this, I went and I drank some more, and I figured it was all the pressure I was under. I needed a vacation. I took 5 weeks vacation with my pay. I rented a little room for, I don't know, $200 for a month, you know. And my vacation started like this. I get up. I have a couple of drinks before I got up. I go to the tavern. I see all my buddies in the tavern. I have lots of friends in the tavern. You know, when you pay the rounds, everybody wants to sit with you, you know. And I go see all my friends in the bars, okay. And at the end of the night, I always ended up in this club, okay. There was an orchestra playing and people used to dance and laugh and have a good time. And I always used to sit in the same place at that bar, you know. And for like about 10 years, I remember, you know. Many times I thought, you know, and I said, Jesus, this all there is to life, you know. Here I am, the end of the night, everybody's happy laughing. I never laughed in my life. I was never happy in my life, you know. All I do is I sit, end up in the same place all the time. What's life all about? It's all a bunch of bullshit, you know. And I hated it. And I figured I was going to sit there till the day I died, you know. I knew there was no way out, you know. And, you know, and so like, one day after a couple of weeks of this, sitting there, you know, and doing these rounds and that, I just got tired of it, you know. I just said, there's no hope for me anymore, you know. The drinking doesn't work anymore. I can drink 6 quarts, 40 ounce a day, and I'm stone sober. The mind won't stop. I sweat. I shake, you know. You know, I can't get that buzz. I can't get that relief. I can't stop the mind anymore, you know. All the crazy thoughts that are going on. I want to kill myself, you know. And then I think, I got like 3 kids at home, you know. I got a daughter, she's 4 years old, you know. Loving little girl and these 2 boys. And I'm never there for them. I'm running around, you know. When I pick up a drink, I throw hundreds of bucks at the strippers at the bar. And the wife's waiting for her grocery money to buy groceries for the kids, you know. That's what a selfish person I am, you know. And here I am, I'm thinking, can't go on like this anymore. I may as well end my life. And I, for some reason, I asked God. I said, God, please help me. Like I said, I didn't believe in God at all since I was like 13. I didn't go to no church. I tried to be the center of everything. And I said, God, please help me. And God said, Al, remember the guy you talked to a couple of weeks ago? He gave you the business card. Why don't you give him a call? And that's the only hope I had, you see. That was the only hope I had because I couldn't figure anything else out. And I ordered my last pint, and I got in the car, I drove to work, put my seat down. And when work opened up, I went in and I went to my office and I made a call. And it was to this treatment place and they said, you know, come down. And I went there for an interview and I ended up in this treatment place for 5 weeks. And I'd like to tell you that it changed my whole life, you know. But it was the beginning. Because you see, for me, I walked in there and I had my attitude, you know, and I knew how all you people behaved, you know. You're all full of shit, all braggers and bullshitters anyways, you know. We're all the same, right? And I sat there and but it was okay. The coffee, all you had to do all day was drink coffee, play cards, shoot pool, and listen to the crowd. And that was it, you know. And after 5 weeks of that, I come out of there and I had to go to this follow-up treatment. And the follow-up was every Wednesday night, okay. And you go there and you bitch about your week, you know, and all the things that were going wrong in your week. And there was this one lady that she wasn't going to any meetings, you know. And they told her, if you don't go to 3 meetings a week, you can't come back. And they kicked her out, you know. And me, you know, this isn't right. How can you kick her out? A good-looking girl like that, you can't kick her out, you know. And I said, listen, if I go to 3 fucking meetings or no meetings a week, you don't know how many meetings I go to. And little Christine, the therapist, says to me, Al, I don't give a fuck how many meetings you go to. Says, you got to be honest with yourself. And she floored me. Man, oh man, how can you say that to me? And the light went on again, you see. It's not what I say, it's what I do, you see. And that's what I learned there from her. It's not what I say, you know. And, you know, she told me, they told me I had to go to 3 meetings a week. I had to join a group and get a sponsor. I don't need a sponsor, eh? Me gonna ask drunks, some drunk, you know, loser to sponsor me, you know. Like now I'm getting better, you see, I'm getting better. My thinking is starting to change again. I'm already figuring out that in 6 months, I'm gonna be able to drink like a normal person, you know. I'm gonna just have a couple, you know. And I'm not gonna drink like before, I'm gonna change my drinking. So I know I have to come here because the judge made me come here. That was part of the conditions. And so I'm coming to AA and I go to this meeting. Saturday night I walk in and I need a sponsor. So I'm usually late. I'm the last guy in, I'm the first guy out. Eh? I got no time for this. Eh? And the guy comes in front of the room and he's dressed nice. He says his name He says he's 2 years sober. He's the injured group rep. You know, he has a book. Bill sees it under his arms. He gets in the front. He reads from the book. You know, he reads all the stuff. And I'm sitting in the back. I'm watching. He says, I'm here to welcome the newcomer. I thought, he's talking to me. I'm a newcomer, you know. He's here to help me, you know. So I get a little bit of courage at the end of the meeting. You know, I sneak my way up to the front to the guy. And I say, listen, I'm in this treatment place. And he said, if I don't get a sponsor, they're going to kick me out. I said, you want to be my sponsor? And he looks at me. He says, I'm very sorry. He says, I can't sponsor you. I thought, the son of a bitch. He gives all that bullshit in front of the room, and then he tells me he can't sponsor me. He's a bunch of hypocrites, you know? So that night, I walk out of there, I'm pissed. You know, I don't know if I can knock his head off or what, but I walk out of there, I go home, I'm pissed. I can't sleep. Saturday night, I can't sleep. Sunday, I can't sleep. All I can wait is to see, you know, her for humiliating me like that, eh? I walk in there Wednesday, you know, and I tell her, you know what? You told me to ask the guy to be my sponsor. I said, he gives the big bullshit in the front of the meeting about how important he is and every 2 years sober and all this. And he's there to help the newcomer. He said, no. He said, he can't help me. You know? So she looks at me. She says, so what? She says, ask somebody else. You know, I carried the resentment for 5 days. She blew it off in 5 seconds. You know? And that's how we are. We're sensitive people. You know, I walk into the room of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's 20 people. And 19 shake my hand, and one person doesn't shake my hand, my eyes on that person all night long, you know? You know? That's how we are, you know? We're funny people like that. So that was the beginning of it, you know? So then when I went to this other meeting Wednesday night, then there was this old guy. He came in there, he had a big mouth. He ran around, he knew everybody, he talked with everybody, he thought he knew everything, you know? And then somebody told me, oh, you don't know that guy? So he was the delegate to New York, you know. I thought, delegate to New York. I said, this is the big boss. Hey, hey, may as well get the big boss instead of getting some small-time guy over here. So I walked up to him. I said, listen, John. I said, I need a sponsor. You want to be my sponsor? And he looked at me, you know, and he said, we'll give it a try, you know. And that was the beginning of it. I got a sponsor and I joined the group. And I'm still at my group. And I used to be smart, you know. When I came to meetings, I used to hear people say they were recovering alcoholics and some were grateful recovering. So me, I get in the front and they asked me one time to read something. I said, my name's Al, I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic addict. And I read it, and at the end of the meeting, he came running to me and he said, you're so grateful, what are you doing about it? And I said, I read that. And he said, Wednesday night, I got an open shift on the phones on Iberville Street, and you're going to go answer those phones. Okay. And I was 2 months sober. I didn't need 1 year training or nothing. I went down there and I answered those phones. And I was going through a divorce and I had criminal charges against me and I had all kinds of charges. And some guy called with not half the problems I had. And I listened to him and at the end of the night I floated out of that office. Because what it did for me is it got me out of myself and it got me to listen to another human being. Okay? And it was the beginning. Because in my mind, it's all about me, you know. But when I take the compassion to listen to care about somebody else, you know, that's what life is about. I know it today, you know. But it took little things like that, you know, to start to change. I started to, you know, I went through all this stuff, went through the divorce with my wife and everything like that, you know. I made a decision. I started to work my steps. Finally, I accepted I was an alcoholic and, you know, and I kept going to meetings, and I started to meet people, and I started to do things in the group. And when my wife was like 9 months, when I was 9 months sober, the ex, she was going to Florida. She had a boyfriend, she was going to Florida. She took my alimony money, my child support money, and she took this schmuck off the street, and she'd go to Florida, and I'm paying him a vacation. Well, me, I'm cleaning the shotgun, okay, because I'm going to bury them both, you know. Because I'm totally mental insane. And I'm going to meetings and people are telling me, pray for him, and the coffee goes in the garbage, and get out of my face, you know, because I don't care if I die, and I don't care who I'm going to take with me, you know. And I'm totally mentally insane, you know. And 2 weeks I'm running around like this, you know. And I couldn't take it anymore. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't function, you know. I was going to explode, just explode. And one night I was just lying there on the couch with my eyes open, you know, and all of a sudden, bang, the light went on, you know, again. And it said, Al, you got to look at yourself. You got to do a fourth step, because people used to tell me, Al, you have to do a fourth step, you know. And you have to see what's wrong with you, what you can change, you know, why you feel the way you do. And I was of the mind that I didn't have to talk to nobody about my life. My life, I grew up, was my business, nobody's business. And I sat down all night and I wrote the next day and I called my sponsor and I said, and he said, he knew, I didn't even say anything. He just said, oh, you did your first step, you know. And I said, yeah, I just finished it. He said, can you meet me? And we met and my life changed, you know. My life changed. Because I saw all my defects of character, why I behaved the way I behaved, you know. Why I held on to all these resentments all of these years against people, you know. I went to a reunion 2 years ago, and there was like two old girlfriends there, and old friends, and other people. People I never had a chance to make amends with, and they live out in BC now, and I probably would have never seen them. And I went, and I had to go, and I had to speak to them, and I said, you know, one of them, I said, Heather, you know, I have to talk to you about, you know, how I behaved and the things I used to do and this and that. And and she said, Al, she says, you were such a nice guy and those things never happened. And I thought, those things never happened. I've been carrying those things around in my head for 30 years and they never happened. You know? And that's crazy sometimes, you know. You know, the way I am. You see, because it's a disease of perception, you know. I sometimes don't see things like other people see it because sometimes I'm oversensitive, you know, and that's how we are. You know? And, you know, bit by bit, I was able to change. I was able to let go of my jealousies. I learned to care about other people, you know, not always about me. I don't know the answers, you know. Today I look back. Sometimes I think things should happen a certain way right now, and I look back a month from now, and I say, thank God that you worked it out your way and it didn't work out my way. Because Christ Almighty, I'd probably be drunk again, you know. And so I have to let go, you know, let God control the show. And me, I just do the little bit I have to do, you know. And I'm grateful for that. And, my dad, the guy I hated the most in my life, I wanted to bury that guy all my life. I just hated him. I couldn't stand him. When I got sober, I went and we started to get together, this and that, you know, and my mom invited me back to the house and to the family. And he had this place out in the country. He had a big land there. He had like 120 acres and he was building a house. And I used to go out on the weekend, you know, and I'd get my kids for Saturday and I'd take them out there and we'd work and build a house. And, you know, we started building some more and then we built another house and we started doing things together. And after I was sober 2 years, he stopped drinking, you know. He died like 2 years ago, but he didn't drink again for almost, well, over 10 years. He never took a drink again. He didn't come to AA, you know, but he controlled it, you know, for a guy that drank all his life, you know. And I said to my sponsor, I said, you know, I said, the old man, I said, boy, he's changing a lot. And John said, the old man is the same he always was. He says, it's you that's changing. And I realized, you know. And I was able to make amends with my dad and him with me, and we became friends and the love, you know. And when he died, it was like a good feeling because I was able to bury him with the family, you know, and give him dignity and respect and everything, you know. And it wasn't about me anymore, you know. And I felt good. I felt really good, like a big burden was lifted, you know. And when my sponsor died, I had the opportunity to go to Ottawa and spend the time at the hospital with him, you know, till the end and be there. My boss said, take off as much time as you need. And I was able to be a part of his family, you know. And the old days would have just been an excuse to drink and feel sorry for myself and screw everybody, you know. And so something changed, you know. And the kids, I got busy. You know, when I came to AA, I met this girl. I was probably around a year sober. And she came to AA, and I met her. She wanted to go for coffee, and then, you know, she wanted to do meetings with me. And then she wanted me to move in with her. Then she wanted to have a kid with me. And I thought, son of a gun, look at me. You know, I'm pretty important. Hey, the chick wants to have a kid. She's getting old, you know. So I went to my sponsor, John. I said, so-and-so wants to have a kid with me. He looked at me, you know. And he said, you got three kids of your own. He said, go look after your kids. Don't go making other kids that you can't take care of. And I thank God for that because I watched my little girl was 4 years old when I come in here. She's 19 now, you know. She goes to university. She's a loving person. If I wasn't in an AA meeting, I'd be in a ballpark or a soccer field or an arena across Quebec. Or Ontario, or in the States, you know. and this is how my life was. I was able to churn my life and do something with my children. And, you know, and it wasn't a gift that I was given to my children. It was a gift my children were given to me. You know, that's what it was. And God gave that to me because I loved it, you know. After a couple of years sober, I became, they asked me one time, a diplomat, Laval, no, Express Laval Hockey Association came to me and he said they wanted me to be director of the association. And I went and I told my sponsor, I said, Christ Almighty, you know what they want from me? I said, he said, well, he said, you walk in the arenas, you shake everybody's hand, you know. And I laughed because that's what I learned in AA. In AA, you walk in, you shake people's hands, you know. And I did the same there, you know, and I was always there for the people. Whenever they needed something, you know. So I became involved in their lives and their schooling and everything, you know. And it's a gift. You know, our family life changes, everything changes. The rewards, you know. In the beginning, not being able to see the kids, and now, you know, being a part of their lives and love. I learned loving here, you know. I never loved anybody, you know. Today I know how to love people and I know how to accept it, you know. And that's a gift, you know. So, my, you know, like I said, life is good. All you got to do is try not to drink, you know. Pray in the beginning. Pray a lot, you know. That's what I used to do. Pray. You know? Just stop my mind from spinning it. Join a group. Get active. You know, to me, service is an important thing, you know. I've been in service since just about I come to AA. One job or another job, and you know, and every time I say I'm going to get out of it, somebody drags me back into it. You know, but it's okay, you know. So long as we can give back, you know, it's a gift, you know, for me. And I'm a better person for it, you know. Sponsorship is important. Get yourself a sponsor. Good sponsor, you know, work your steps. You know, do some service in your home group. And carry the message, you know. And my sponsor always talked, you know, he was a delegate to New York, and he used to talk about coming out of the hotel, you know, because he was like, used to like junk food, like he liked greasy food, like bacon and eggs and sausages, you know, instead of eating like the healthy food, and he'd go across the street, and there'd be like this greasy spoon place, and that's where he used to go eat, you know. And every night, every morning he'd get out, and he used to be these drunks, you know, in New York City. They'd be lying, you know, near the girders trying to keep warm, eh, and this and that. And he used to have to step over them, eh. And he got this realization that the only difference between those drunks lying on the sidewalk drunk and him is he's not drinking, and he's inside the conference. And these people, if they would stop drinking and sober up, they could be inside, and him drinking would be right back out there on the street again, you know. So that's all it is. We have one day at a time, you know. We have to stay spiritually fit and try to help another person. So, you know, if you're not feeling well, talk to somebody, you know, because we're all the same. I know men and women in this program, we're all the same. I want to thank you very much, Dave, for asking me. God bless you all. I love you. Happy 24.
Thanks a lot, Al. But I've asked Brent to thank you this evening.
Hi, everyone. My name is Brent, and I'm an alcoholic. Okay. Al, thanks a lot for a message. That means, so it's very clear.